Over the ritual gestures, by instinct, she could feel the unnatural hunger of the animated corpses and the dull animal agony which marked their wretched persistence. Though their souls were gone, their flesh still functioned, still felt the phantoms of hunger, thirst, and pain. In trying to control them, her mind was open to theirs. She and the other voivodes were forced to endure the ache of splintered bones and rotting flesh, and the gnawing, unquenchable desire for living meat.
"There are so many of them," Mayan said.
The leader of the Wald looked spent already, her eyes hollow with exhaustion.
"So many."
"It doesn't matter," Tamra said. "Our people are counting on us. What we do now, we do for them." As she spoke, she could hear the murmurings of the broken kings, stronger now with all of the magic swirling about the air.
"Free us! For them! Free us!"
"I cannot!" Tamra hissed. "I will not!"
Mayan looked at her.
"What?"
"Nothing. The enemy are upon us. Do you hear?"
Tamra felt a jolt as the dead sighted the living. The black hunger asserted itself, and the zombies lurched forwards with a communal moan. Through their eyes, she could see the front ranks of the foe drawing close. She slackened her hold on the dead walkers, allowing them to surge forwards. Arrows rattled across the stones. The bows of the Rotbringers were heavier than those of the few clansmen occupying the walls, and they had a longer range. A voivode cursed and gestured. In the ruins below, packs of long-dead hunting dogs loped silently towards the archers. The enemy was bogged down, caught halfway to the walls by the charnel horde. They would have to hack themselves a path through a thicket of clawing hands and teeth. Tamra gestured, and the smoke rising from one of the braziers in the tower coalesced into the snarling features of the Prince of Crows.
"How do you fare, sister?" he growled.
The Ghoul King still had her confused with his long-dead sister, Isa. Tamra had given up trying to convince him otherwise. She suspected some part of him knew the truth, regardless.
"We have stopped the advance for now. You know what you must do."
"Aye, we fall upon them as we swore. The city shall not fall, sister. And soon we shall be reunited and my people made whole again."
Tamra nodded tersely and broke the connection with a gesture.
"He's mad," Mayan said. "Can we trust them?"
"He is, and we can."
The corpse eaters would come, because Nagash had commanded it. Tamra had said nothing of Nagash's presence in the caves to the other voivodes. Neferata had insisted that she claim sole responsibility for the act, another strand of her web. Tamra pushed the thought aside. Now was not the time for worrying about the future. The here and now was dangerous enough. She glanced at the sky, wondering where Neferata was. They would use the Mortark's strength, if only to alleviate some of the burden on themselves. As she looked up, she heard a deep droning sound. The voivode's chanting faltered. The sky was full of flies. The Sisterhood of Zandor waited in the lee of a hostelry wall, alongside the main avenue for their moment to strike. For 5 centuries, the Blood Knights had waged Neferata's wars on 3 continents and across 2 realms, and they were the very picture of martial discipline. They had been trained by the Blood Dragon himself and had forgotten more about war than most could learn in a lifetime. And yet, even for them, waiting was the hardest part. Or so it was for Adema. The gift of the Soul Blight had done little to curb the Castellan's natural impatience. War was her art, and she was ever keen to practice it upon the enemies of her queen. She sat atop her restive steed, kneading the animal's muscled neck with her iron-shrouded fingers, watching as the battle unfolded. Neferata's plan was elegant in its simplicity. They needed time to call up the drowned dead, and for the ghouls to muster, and for one other element besides, so the enemy had to be caught and held in the ruins. They had to be delayed by hours or days, if possible, battered, bloodied, and bruised until the time was right. Adema glanced towards the far crags of the Wailing Peaks. Though she was weak in the arts of sorcery, she could feel the pull of the souls trapped there well enough. An army of the dead and damned, imprisoned by Nagash and unlikely to be freed, save in the right circumstances and by the right person. "Poor little poppet," she murmured with bleak amusement. Neferata's gambits were as fire, burning all in reach. She shook her head and turned her attentions back to the matter at hand. Outside the remains of the hostelry, dead walkers flooded the ruined streets. They stumbled towards the advancing rot-bringers in ever-increasing numbers, spilling out of broken hovels and clambering out of hillocks of rubble, responding to Neferata's call. Few mortals, living or dead, could resist the whispered entreaties of the Mortarg of Blood, a fact Adema had learned, much to her own cost. She could hear the clamour of the foe's bells and the bellicose roars of beast-things drawing near. The beastmen hacked at the staggering dead with futile abandon, trying to chop themselves a path straight towards the mandible's main gate. They were joined in this vain enterprise by mortal rot-bringers. The frothing zealots chanted the sevenfold name of their god as they smashed zombies to the ground with shields and cudgels. More than one were dragged down and torn apart, or devoured where they stood. Similar battles were raging on either side of the avenue throughout the ruins. Thousands of dead walkers pushed southwards like a living wall, stymieing any attempt by Nurgle's followers to advance or slip past. Swarms of bats fluttered about the heads of the sorcerers who crouched on the war altars. The zealots pushed forwards, distracting them. Screeching spirit hosts issued from dry wells and broken buildings, swirling about those who'd invaded the city where they'd died. Everywhere, in the ruin with no name, the dead strove savagely against the living. Adema tapped the pommel of her sword, considering her options. A charge now would break the mortals and send them running back along the main avenue, but the true might of the foe was still plodding along. Those were the ones she wanted. "Taking their time," she murmured. She glanced skywards, searching for some sign of Neferata. It was rare that her queen participated in open battle. Neferata was not one to sully her hands if she could help it. The Rictus, fools that they were, had expected her to lead from the front, as their own voivodes did. She suspected that the Mortarch was out on the ice somewhere, waiting for the inevitable. It was on the ice that this matter would be settled. The death throes of the Rictus were but a sideshow to Neferata's true purpose.
"The air smells foul,"
a Blood Knight said. Others murmured agreement.
"Demons," Adema said.
Only demons had that particular odour. Strange yowls broke out. The rot-bringer ranks dissolved into confusion as heavy slug-like bodies barreled through them, slashing the air with pulpy tendrils. Adema watched the slobbering demon beasts flounder through the packed ranks of the dead walkers. The demons put her in mind of her father's kennels, in happier days before the fall of Xandor, and of the yapping pups of his hunting hounds, all enthusiasm and no brains. The ranks of corpses split and flowed around the demons, stumbling on to meet the regrouping rot-bringers.
"Now, sister?"
one of her knights asked eagerly.
"Not yet. Let the offal earn its keep a few moments more."
She cast a glance at the walls of the mandible. Somewhere up there, Neferata's new favourite was controlling the dead. Her lip curled back from a fang, and she looked away. In truth, she bore the mortal no ill will. She could not help what she was, or that Neferata was interested in moulding her into something more useful to the Mortarch's long-term goals. Nonetheless, it was irksome to endure such manoeuvrings. Luckily, she was in the right place to work out her frustrations. A low droning sound filled the air. She peered up and saw dozens of large winged shapes hurtle overhead. She'd fought the servants of Nurgle before, and knew plague drones when she saw them. The demonic insects sped towards the walls of the mandible in their hundreds, bypassing the dead walkers entirely.
"That bodes ill," she said absently. But it wasn't her responsibility. The mandible would fall sooner or later. It wasn't up to her to protect it. Her role was only to bleed the foe and savage them where she judged best. And one other thing besides. A little thing, but annoying nevertheless. Her freedom to enjoy the song of war would only last until the walls fell. The moment the mandible was taken, she was to lead her sisters back to seek out and keep safe the object of Neferata's immediate affections. The voivode of the Drac was key to victories not yet born, or so her queen insisted. That one death mage, however powerful, could be so important exasperated Edima. Her hopes of enjoying herself for a good long while before then, however, were few. The dead faltered as the Blightflies reached the walls and began their attack. The voivodes controlling them were obviously distracted. It would likely be their undoing. Edima peered over the morass of battle and saw mounted warriors guiding their scaly steeds forwards through the snowy ruins in support of the marching shield-bearers. Chaos Knights bearing the blighted blessings of Nurgle. They were the prey she was after, and she intended to claim them before it was too late. She kicked her steed into motion. "Now, sisters, time to bleed them a bit." The Blood Knights exploded from the hostelry and galloped into the disorganized mass of rotbringers who packed the avenue. Bodies were sent flying or else crushed beneath iron-shod hooves. Edima leaned over in her saddle and removed a beastman's head. Her sisters' lances pierced bloated torsos and gouged great wounds in those fortunate enough not to be impaled. The hooves and teeth of their nightmare steeds added to the toll of destruction. Edima laughed as she led her warriors through the ranks of the enemy. The ruined walls to either side of the avenue were splashed with ichor. Few living things could resist the charge of the Sisterhood of Xandor. Dead walkers stumbled in their wake. "The ones with the shields," she called out. "Let us crack them wide." Iron-rimmed shields splintered as they struck a hastily erected shield wall. Edima laid about her on either side, cleaving skulls and chopping through upraised blades. The Blood Knights carved a red path through the ranks, and the mortals broke in the face of such fury, streaming away from the rampaging vampires. But Edima had already forgotten them. Her true prey was in sight. With a roar, she led her sisters towards the Knights of Nurgle. Edima shouted for joy as they met in the centre of the avenue. Rykon Vendrak loped through the frost-limbed trees, sword in hand. His warriors moved in loose formation around him, clutching their own weapons. They descended the slopes of the Wailing Peaks in their hundreds, eager to give battle. The call had come, and they had answered, as he'd sworn. His sister needed his aid, and he intended to give it. The High King could do no less, recognized ruler or no. He glanced towards the mandible and cursed. The monstrous flies swarmed over the fortress in great numbers, and he could hear the droning call of demons in the ruins. The enemy had come in even greater strength than he'd been led to believe. He found he didn't mind. More enemies meant more to kill.
"Come, warriors of the Rictus, that our foes are plenty."
His brave warriors gave a cheer and charged down towards the Rotbringers, working to fell trees. They scattered, seeking weapons and shouting warnings to their fellows. Rykon led from the front, and he caught one of the startled creatures in a hard blow with his sword. It flipped head over heels and collapsed into the snow. His warriors fell upon the others, biting and clawing. No, why had he thought that? He shook his head, trying to dislodge the image of gaunt grey shapes hacking, smashing and gouging victims with claws and bone clubs. His men were rough, it was true, but they were not beasts. Not like the creatures they fought. not like the one now roaring and slapping his men aside like flies. The monster had been a man once, but now he was a bloated thing, his flesh bulging with abominable larvae.
"Turn, monster! Turn and face the High King!"
Riken roared as he surged towards the creature. The beast spun, and Riken was forced to swerve beneath the sweep of an axe. He lunged up, catching the haft of the axe and halting its swing.
"I smell the blood of kinsmen on you,"
he said, as he strained against his opponent.
"Are you of the Rictus?" "I am Kroger, beast. First of my clan to accept the blessed miasma of the King of All Flies."
Kroger roared, shoving Riken back. His axe flashed down, splitting the ground where Riken had been standing. Riken leapt over him, causing the renegade to whirl.
"A traitor's death, then,"
Riken hissed, as he bawled full into the renegade. Kroger screamed as Riken's claws, no, his hands, pierced his chest and slammed him against the ground. Riken's jaws gaped wide and he sank his fangs into Kroger's throat. With a jerk of his neck, he tore his foe's jugular out. He spat the lump of tainted flesh aside and lurched up and away from the twitching corpse, clutching his head. The appearance of the warriors around him wavered, revealing pale flesh draped in rags and rotted armor, rather than furs and bronze. Bearded faces bled away into feral, fang-studded maws, and determined gazes became mad. Riken blinked and shook his head.
"Are you well, my lord?"
one of his warriors asked. Gasbrol Venwald, a loyal and true servant. But to Riken's confused gaze, the man's expression was at once a querulous snarl and a grimace of concern. He seemed to have two faces, and Riken could only guess as to which was the true one. He rubbed his eyes, trying to banish the delusions.
"Aye, Gasbrol, my friend,"
he said, clasping his man on the shoulder.
"Some effect of the foul miasma which accompanies our foes. It distorts my senses, I fear."
"No less than ours, I suspect," Gasbrol said, with a shake of his shaggy head. "For a moment, milord, I thought you some great beast."
"The only beasts here are these rot-bringers,"
Riken growled.
"They seek to take our lands from us, something not even the Undying King could do, and I intend to show them why."
His men let out a raucous cheer, and Riken straightened.
"Come, brothers! Shall we leave our kin at the mercy of these monsters?"
He pointed his sword towards a band of approaching armsmen. There were many of them, which was good. He was quite hungry. The plague drones filled the air, blotting out the grey light of the ghost sun. The hum of their wings was as thunder, and the stamp of demonic feet caused the earth to shake. Demons flooded into the ruins, hewing bloody pathways through the dead. It was everything Gurm had hoped it would be, and more. Life against death, fecundity versus stagnation.
"Look at my lovelies, fly walkers. Have you ever seen a more majestic sight?"
Gurm called out as he caught sight of the Blightmaster riding towards him at full pelt. Walgus soared back on his mount's reins, causing it to rear. Hooves slashed out, and the nearby plague-bearers scattered with grunts of alarm. Gurm's palanquin stumbled, nearly tossing him to the ground. He caught himself on a branch and gave an irritated twist. The Sylvaneth squealed, in a voice like snapping green twigs.
"You could have just said no,"
Gurm said, glowering at Walgus.
"I did say no. Did I not say that we would take this fortress?"
Walgus had his mace in hand, and the haft creaked in his grip. His personal armsmen had joined him, and the mortals warily faced the demons over the rims of their shields. Behind them, the camp echoed with the sounds of battle and the cries of ghouls. Gurm looked towards the camp, and then at Walgus.
"Then why aren't you out there taking it? Instead, you take your ease here while your knights ride out to reap glory."
Walgus didn't flinch this time. He'd drunk from the chalice, and he was firm in his convictions once more. It is for a Blightmaster to oversee the tides of battle, not splash in its embrace. Lines must be bolstered, ranks firmed, retreats sounded. Such is my burden. Why do you seek to steal my victory, Herald? You have cast my tactics into the dust and rendered my strategy meaningless.
Actually, you told me to keep to my schemes, and so I have.
Gurm reclined on his cushions, his bail sword across his knees.
You know the camp is under attack, I trust.
I am well aware. My warriors fight to contain it. Unlike you, they are trustworthy. Gurm clutched his chest in mock pain.
I do not have time to waste watching you play master of sieges, boy. There's more at stake here than your pride. Then why bring us?
Walgus demanded.
Someone must pay the blood toll for getting me here. You were my shield, blunting those attacks which would have sapped my power. Now I cast you aside and unsheathe my sword for the killing blow. That is war, isn't it?
Walgus shook his head.
You have no idea what war is, nor do I have time to teach you. Is this all for glory, then? Is this to be Gurm's victory rather than the Order's?
It is to be Nurgle's victory,
Gurm said,
for we serve him in this, as in all things.
But to what end?
Walgus pointed his mace at Gurm's head.
What is in that fortress that you cannot wait for us to take it?
Gurm licked his jowls thoughtfully. Walgus thrummed with resentment. His honour had been pricked wide and now bled freely. His warriors marched on the final redoubt of those they'd come so far and endured so much to make war on, and the moment was being snatched from them. Necessary, all of it, but risky.
Perhaps I was over hasty,
Gurm said. He spread his palms in apology.
I was overcome with fervour, Walgus. Surely you understand. The King of all Flies speaks, and we can but obey.
What does he say, Gurm? And none of your homilies this time. Why are we here?
Gurm sucked on his fangs, debating with himself. If he removed Walgus's head now, there would be an outcry. The problem with the Order was that they took the business of war far too seriously. While it was rare, it wasn't unknown for the servants of Nurgle to turn upon one another for silly reasons. Life was competition, after all. But there was no time for that now. He still needed Walgus, if only to keep the Order in the fight.
A gate, he said.
He leaned forwards.
Two Stygics.
Walgus stared at him. Gurm sighed.
The underworld, Walgus, where Nagash resides.
Nagash is dead, Walgus said automatically.
So he is, and what is left of him hides in the underworld. I would seek those aberrant remains out and fill the guts of this realm with Nurgle's squirming legions.
He extended his sword towards the sea.
There, do you sense it, Walgus? A hole in the world, somewhere below the ice. It is there I must go. But I must shatter this fortress to do so.
Why did you not tell me this before?
Few men are willing to march into the jaws of a god, even a dead one,
Gurm said. A lie, of course. But Papa Nurgle would forgive him.
A holy crusade indeed,
Walgus said absently. He stared out at the sea.
To conquer the underworld in Nurgle's name would bring great honour to the Order. Indeed it would, my friend, indeed it would.
Gurm leaned back, pleased. After all,
There was still plenty of time to shuck the order and claim victory for himself.
And together, you and I will do just that.
Chapter 10. Fall of the Rictus.
The great bells of Ossuary shall sound 9 times, and the seas of all the realms shall dry up. I will stride across the empty oceans, and the drowned dead shall rise at my call. I will crack the earth and shatter the mountains. 9 words shall I speak, and nothing more shall ever be said.
The Epistle of Bone. Aged Aaron was the first to fall. A scabrous arrow left sprouting from his eye as he stood chanting atop the ruined tower. He slumped with barely more than a sigh. Tamra watched in horror as his skull collapsed in on itself, eaten away by the rot emanating from the arrow. His body began to twitch a moment later, like a side of meat eaten hollow by maggots. Something giggled tinnily as Aaron's bat-winged helm rolled away with a clang. A moment later, tiny, bloated demons spilled out of the old man's body and scampered across the tower. Mayan and the others yelped and cursed as they were forced to turn their attentions to the tiny demons and away from the battle below, and from the buzzing hordes approaching from above. Tamra stamped on a nurgling as it clawed at her leg. Arrows tore at her coat, and she narrowly avoided the slash of a rotfly's stinger. The insect screeched as one of the other voivodes lanced it with an arcane bolt, and sent it tumbling away, wreathed in purple flame. Everywhere that arrows thudded home, nurglings sprouted. The tiny demons bubbled up from the slime-tipped heads of the arrows and ran every which way. Tamra snatched up a brazier and scattered burning coals across the closest pack of the tittering creatures. As they screamed and crisped, she looked out over the fortress. The air above the mandible was full of plague drones. The demonic riders cut men from the walls with gleaming bale swords, or else hurled fiery skulls. One of the skulls struck the base of the tower and erupted into plague fire. Something swelled within the flames and stuck to the stones. Greasy tendrils of smoking wood crept upwards, clutching the tower like a creeper vine. More patches of insidious plant life crept across the walls or spilled across the courtyard, growing in the heat of the plague fires. Obscene blossoms sprouted from the tendrils, spewing a noxious pollen into the smoky air. The tower began to shudder as the tendrils that were wrapped about it tightened. Tamra gestured, and a howling cavalcade of frenzied spirits raced to strike at the writhing vegetation. She heard a scream from behind her, and whirled to see Mayan sag, a plaguebearer's blade in her back. The demon yanked the weapon free and charged towards Tamra, chuckling evilly. She dragged her sword from its sheath as it reached her, and black lightning snapped as their blades met. She staggered, thrown off balance by the force of the blow, and then stumbled further as the tower groaned and began to turn on its base. Stones clashed and timbers burst as the tendrils crushed the base of the tower, and sent the entire structure slewing towards the wall. Instinctively, Tamra leapt. There was no time for anything else, not even to shout a warning to the other voivodes. Heart thudding in her chest, the world spinning about her, she screamed. Spectres streaked upwards at her call and caught her in cold claws. They swarmed about her like a cyclone and carried her roughly to the ground. She hit the earth hard and rolled, barely holding on to her sword. The tower crashed heavily against the wall, crushing ancient masonry beneath it. Dust billowed as the tower continued its descent, striking the ground with an echoing boom. The wall collapsed inwards, carrying men and demons with it. She covered her head as shrapnel struck the ground around her. Demons poured through the newly made gap in the wall, attacking any who staggered into their path. The dead lurched through fire and smoke to meet the invaders. The skeletal warriors had been meant to counter-attack when the Rotbringers drew close to the walls, but now they marched forwards, battling against the demons who thrust themselves through the weak points in the walls and spilled into the courtyard. Spirits swept, shrieking through the air, dueling with the buzzing plague drones. But the dead were too few, and the demons almost limitless.
"Do you live, Drac?"
someone coughed. She rolled onto her back and looked up at Bolgu. Blood stained his furs and warplate, and ichor smoked on the blade of his axe. He gripped her arm and dragged her to her feet.
"On your feet, woman! We must flee!"
"The walls!"
she said, fighting for breath. Everything hurt, and she was bleeding from a graze on her cheek. Plague fires roared up, casting sickly shadows across the courtyard. She could feel their heat in her bones, and suddenly she was back in her own steading, and her home was burning again before her eyes. Bolgu shook her, snapping her back to the present.
"The walls have fallen, as I said they would. Come on!"
He half-dragged her towards the Seawood Gate. People were streaming through it, carrying nothing save children or weapons. A phalanx of skeletal warriors was arrayed before the gate, warding off any enemy who got too close. Tamra jerked her arm free of Bolgu's grip.
"I will not flee," she said. "Not again."
"Not flee. Free us. Free us."
The broken kings howled in her head, pounding at the walls of her consciousness. He glared at her.
"And who will lead our people if we die here? Those who can will flee to the galleys. My crews have orders to cast off as soon as the holds are full. If we are not on those ships, they will leave us."
"Then go, if you must. I will stay."
She turned and drew her blade.
"Someone must hold them back."
"Hold them back. Call us forth. Free us."
"Let the dead do it," said Bolgu. "Our responsibility is to the living."
She hesitated, remembering old hopes and old voices. She looked at Bolgu.
"Let's go."
Festabite shoved his way through the broken Seawood Gatehouse, past knots of giggling nurglings. Scab was dead, thanks to one of the monstrous knights who'd engaged him and his brothers in the central avenue. He'd been thrown from the saddle, and by the time he'd recovered, a dozen brave knights, including Sir Balagos, had joined Scab in death. He'd engaged one of the creatures, spearing it with a broken standard. When the walls had fallen, the remaining vampires had fled like the cowards they were. He looked forward to hunting them down later, when the battle was won. There was much honour to be gained by purging the realm of such perfidious creatures. For now, he would content himself with the joys of executing their mortal followers in Nurgle's name. A skeleton stumbled towards him, its limbs weighed down by giggling nurglings. He took off its head with a single blow. More of the fleshless dead filled the courtyard, battling Gurm's legions and the Order's warriors. Mortals fought too. They were brave, if misguided, and he felt some touch of pity for them. Their world was coming to an end, and they could not conceive of the better one which awaited them. Several black fletched arrows ricocheted off his armour, startling him. Clansmen scurried along the walls above, firing as they fled for more stable ground. The short, recursive bows of the Rictus were as toys when compared to the long bows of the Order's armsmen, though he was forced to admit they had their merits at short range when one last arrow sank deep into his arm. There was no pain, but it was inconvenient. As he paused to pull it loose, he scanned the shoreline. The savages were fleeing for the iron-prowed galleys being shoved onto the ice with great booming cracks. There were not enough vessels for all of them, and some of the savages had turned back to face their pursuers with looks of hopeless desperation. Others fled for the rocky slopes, or sought shelter in the ruins of the once massive docklands, which dominated much of the waterfront. It mattered little where they ended up. All would be brought to heel eventually. Those who would not sip from the fly-blown chalice and accept the blessings of Nurgle into their hearts would be made into mulch for the garden. But that didn't mean they would be allowed to escape unscathed. Demons flooded into the ice in pursuit of the galleys, accompanied by the remaining knights of the Order and the quickest of the Rotbringers. He caught sight of Walgus's personal banner flapping in the wind, and he felt a moment of elation. The Blightmaster was leading the charge, as was only fitting. This was a great victory for the Order of the Fly, perhaps the greatest in its history. Troubadours would sing of this day, and the tapestries dedicated to the long march from the Ithilien Gate would hang in Kangawall. Walgus would be heralded as the greatest of the seven Blightmasters, and the Order would have a foothold in the realms of life and death. Chuckling to himself, Festabite started towards the Docklands. He would leave pursuit of the galleys to those with steeds and to Gurm's demonic followers. Instead, he would content himself with cleansing these ruins of savages. He was joined by Blight Kings and frothing zealots as he entered the tangle of docks, jetties, and capsized galleys. He was glad to see Molov still alive, and the Blight King nodded to him in greeting.
A fine day, eh, Sir Festabite? The finest, my friend,
Festabite said with a laugh.
Come, let us bring the warmth of the garden to these cold souls.
Mortals fled in terror before them, squeezing like rats through frozen timbers. Some turned to fight, but fell to heavy blades, maces, and cudgels. Hot blood slopped across the ice, and Festabite rejoiced. They had spent too long in the wilderness, fighting things which didn't bleed.
Don't kill all of them. Take those who surrender, he shouted to Molov. We're not beasts, after all.
As he said it, warriors burst from the shadows and attacked. A spear grated across his helm, and he caught the haft. Wrenching it from its owner's grip, he cut the hapless savage down.
Yield, and you will be spared,
he roared, kicking the twitching corpse from his blade.
Submit to the Lord of all things, and find your soul's salvation.
An axe sank into his arm, and he spun, stabbing the man who'd wielded it. The Rictor staggered back, clutching at his stomach. Festabite reached for the wounded man, but found himself distracted by a painful blow on the back. He sank to one knee, wheezing, as his attacker circled him and caught up the wounded man. The woman glanced over her shoulder as she dragged her bleeding burden into the shallows, retreating into the forest of wreckage that had once been Docklands. Her narrow features were tight with fear. Festabite heaved himself to his feet and stomped after her.
You cannot escape me, woman, he called out. Yield, and I will grant you mercy. There is no need to die today. Death is the enemy. Seek salvation in life.
Quiet, Tamra whispered. Quiet.
Behind her, Bolgu was trying to scream. The wound in his gut was festering far more quickly than she'd expected. Fat maggots squirmed beneath his ravaged flesh, and his eyes were wide with pain. The pox knight who'd wounded Bolgu had followed them into the wreckage of the shallows and was still searching for them with his fellows. The creature bellowed words of mercy and surrender, even as he struck down those who drew too close. She winced with every blow and scream. They'd been heading for the galleys when they'd seen the Rotbringers attacking those seeking shelter in the frozen docks. Despite himself, Bolgu had been unable to ignore their cries. There was more to the voivode of the Fen than she'd thought, and she felt a pang of regret that she wouldn't have the opportunity to know him better. Bolgu grabbed her wrist. She looked down at the injured voivode.
What? What are you trying to say?
Bolgu clawed at the hooked knife in his belt, and she understood. The rot was in him, eating him hollow the way it had Aaron.
"Life in death," she said, as she drew the knife.
He sagged in relief as, with only a moment's hesitation, she sank the blade to the hilt in his chest. He shuddered once and died. She rolled his body away and wiped her hands on her trousers, feeling faintly ill. Bolgu had been the last. As far as she knew, all the other voivodes were dead. Neferata had been right, Arkan as well. And now the moment she dreaded was upon her. Past the wreckage, she could see demons pouring onto the ice. Some pursued the fleeing ice-cutter galleys. Others raced towards Arkan the Black, still standing his lonely watch. Hundreds more were occupied slaughtering those who sought shelter in the Mandible or in the forests above it. The walls had fallen and the battle was lost, but her folk were still fighting, still struggling against the inevitable. And it was inevitable. She saw that now. Victory had never been an option. They were meat, bait to lure the beast. Neferata waited somewhere to capitalize on the Rotbringer's exuberance and ensure that the jaws of her trap snapped shut at the proper time. The dead could afford to be patient. Tamra felt no anger, only fatigue.
"I will serve him in life and death," she murmured.
Her hand fell to her sword. Smoke was rising from the Mandible. The plague fires burned freely. She could hear her people screaming, fighting, dying. Some of them were still alive, some of them could still be saved, but she couldn't do it alone.
"We can save them,"
the Broken Kings whispered.
"Let us save our people, daughter. Let us help them. Free us."
Their voices reverberated in her skull. Her head throbbed full of visions and faces of scenes from the past, or perhaps from the future. The air stank of milk and spoiled meat. The ice cracked beneath her feet. Her breath burned in her lungs, freezing her inside and out. The edges of her vision pulsed black as she stretched out a hand towards the distant crags.
"Free us! Free us! Free us!" "Yes."
It was easy, once the intent was there. Just as Neferata had said. The bindings were weak and the ghosts were strong. They wanted freedom and they pushed while she pulled. So very strong. She heard a gruesome crack and a roar of stone and ice. She felt empty as she staggered back against the frozen wood. The pox knight that had wounded Bolgu whirled at the sound and stormed towards her, chopping through ice-sheathed ropes and frost-blackened wood in his haste.
"There you are," he gurgled. "Thought you could hide, eh? An admirable attempt, but the game is done now."
She got her sword up just in time. The force of his blow knocked her skidding. Bones aching, she fumbled to her feet. She felt like a wrung-out rag. Her head pounded with the rumble of hooves and the rattle of armour. She avoided her opponent's next blow and the third. She raised her sword and backed away, panting. The pox knight stalked after her, a throaty chuckle slithering from his fleshless, fang-studded jaws.
"Yield, witch, yield, and perhaps I'll spare you."
"I have been made that offer before. I did not yield then. I shall not yield now."
The pox knight stopped. He inclined his head.
"As you wish."
He swung his blade up in a salute.
"You are brave, woman. Your suffering shall be swift."
He advanced, the ice cracking beneath him with every plodding step.
"Yours will be anything but."
The pox knight looked up as a heavy form descended in a shower of snow from the tangle of canvas and nets, smashing him from his feet. The knight's sword flew from his grip, and a clawed hand drove his head through the ice and into the chill waters below.
Do you yet live, Aisa?
Riken growled as he held the struggling warrior's head beneath the ice. Over his shoulder, she saw the other Rotbringers swarmed by ghouls. The sounds of their screams almost drowned out the cacophony in her head. The Pox Knight's thrashings grew weaker as long moments passed. Tamra didn't speak until he'd fallen still and silent.
I live. The others?
They flee across the ice like cattle. You broke his law, Aisa. I felt it in my soul.
Riken left the body where it lay, half in the ice, and padded towards her.
I can hear them riding up from the dark hollows of the earth, and all the souls who dared follow them into the black are riding with them.
Black blood ran down his gaunt, grey form. Broken arrows jutted from his broad back and shoulders, and seeping sword cuts marked his chest and arms.
My name is Tamra, she began.
The pressure in her head had slackened, but she could still hear the Broken Kings roaring in triumph as they swept down from their mountain prison. She could see the Rotbringers in the Mandible fleeing before them. She could feel the shock of a tomb blade biting into corrupted flesh. She shook her head, trying to clear her mind of the unwanted images and voices alike.
We are coming, daughter! We are free! Free!
I know what your name is,
the Ghoul King snarled, catching her by her coat. He slammed her back against a wooden strut.
I know who you are, and I know what you have done. You have freed our father and his brothers, and Nagash will punish us.
I did what I had to do. He will understand. Neferata, free, free, free.
Neferata lies.
Riken's voice was nearly a shriek.
I told you that. They all lie. We are lies wrapped in flesh. Nagash's lie. Nagash's flesh. And you have broken Nagash's law.
He released her and stepped back, gargoyle features twisted in anger.
Why?
To save our people,
Tamra said. She snatched up her sword.
I am Drak. What we have, we hold. I have my people, and I will hold them. We will save them. Save them.
Riken stared at her, crimson gaze unreadable.
I thought as you did once. And now I think that I am mad.
He plucked a broken arrow from his flesh.
I love you, sister.
Tamra's hand tightened on the hilt of Sapa's sword.
I love you, brother,
she said, the words like ashes in her mouth.
Our people, we will save them.
How sweet. Tamra turned. Adema grinned at her. The Castellan looked the worse for wear. Her armour was tattered and blooded, and wounds marked her visible flesh. But she still held her sword, and it was still as sharp as ever. Several of her warriors stood behind her, or crouched in the wreckage, and their red eyes gleamed hungrily. You stirred them up, didn't you, Poppet? Adema said. I felt it in my marrow, even as she planned. She extended her sword towards Riken, and he snarled at her. How does it feel to be a cog in her great machine? Is it all that you hoped? Tamra said nothing. What was there to say? Adema was right.
Did you fight your way through the foe just to taunt me?
Don't flatter yourself, Poppet. Adema pointed her sword at Tamra. I came to protect you, to ensure that you survive your foolishness. She smiled thinly and spread her arms. You see how much she cares for you? Gurm nodded in satisfaction as the walls of the mandible fell. The skulls that the plague drones carried had been specially prepared for him in Gairan, pickled in the sap squeezed from corrupted trees. Already the stinking heat radiated by the great tendrils was melting the snow to slurry and blistering the stones. The contaminated plant life would inundate the fortress, converting it into something more pleasing to Nurgle's eye. Soon it would do the same to the Wailing Peaks themselves, coring out the harsh stone and replacing it with moss, mould, and agreeably rancid spoilage.
"Life against death," he said, glancing at Walgus.
The Blightmaster rode alongside Gurm's palanquin. Together they traversed the corpse-strewn avenue which led to the main gate of the crumbling fortress, leading a band of demons and rot-bringers.
"Life against death,"
Walgus echoed.
"I admit your way is the faster."
He didn't sound happy about it, but Gurm hadn't expected that. Walgus was practical, if nothing else. He knew better than to poke a gift rash on the scab.
"I did say,"
Gurm chortled. His honour guard of plague bearers echoed his amusement. Behind him, the sounds of battle rose from the siege camp. Packs of ghouls scuttled through the ruins, attacking isolated warriors. Gurm paid it little heed. Let the beasts have their fun while it lasted. Soon enough, the Order would put their warrens to the torch and hunt them down with bow and hound. Whatever plan the mortals had had, he'd put paid to it.
"The fortress is ours, and the way to our true goal is open," Walgus said. "This is a great victory for the King of All Flies."
He gestured, and the armsmen who followed them broke into a lope, streaming towards the shattered gates. There was still fighting going on within the fortress, and there would be for some time. But the way was open, and the foe was on the run.
"Indeed it is, and with it comes the utter ruination of all our enemies' hopes. He cannot hide from us for long. We shall beard him in his lair, and drag his broken bones back to Cankerwall."
Gurm shook his fist at the distant ice. The spectre of Nagash had vanished, gone back to Stygix to cower in fear, he suspected. But he could still hear the chanting. He'd heard it since their arrival and had assumed it was coming from the mandible. Now he wasn't so sure. It was coming from somewhere out on the ice. A grim voice echoing up to the sky above. It had not faltered. Not even when the mandible had fallen. And he could feel the skeins of magic in the air tightening, as if a great working were nearing its completion. The looming peaks rumbled, as if an avalanche were in the offing. He glanced over, curious, but saw nothing save the play of fading light across distant snows. He turned his attention back to the shivering sea. Something was happening, out on the ice. Some last-ditch scheme to deny them victory. But it was too late. The North had fallen, and soon all of Shaiish would follow suit. The Realms of Death would become a new garden for Nurgle to enjoy, and the name Dolorous Gurm would be whispered by every blighted blossom. He thumped the point of his sword against the floor of the palanquin, encouraging the Sylvaneth to greater speed. The ice and the gate to Stygix awaited.
"Come, Walgus. We have a gate to claim and a guard to humble."
Chapter 11. Nagash Rises.
"There are 9 gates, and behind them wait my 9-fold legions. 9 is the number of the books which contain my wisdom. 9 is the number of my mortargs. And I shall speak 9 words, before the final gate and cast it wide, and all shall be consumed in darkness, as the light of every realm is snuffed at the ninth and ultimate hour.
The Epistle of Bone.
Neferata sat back in her saddle and watched as the Mandible collapsed and the Rictus fled to their galleys. She frowned. The battle she'd spent so much time engineering should have taken days, not hours. The demons had thrown her calculations off. She'd thought that the disgusting creatures would wait until they had the gate to Stygix in reach to unleash their full power. Instead, they'd burst like an overripe pustule and thrown all her plans into disarray. "That's the problem when dealing with the stuff of chaos, Nagadron," she said. "It's impossible to predict, even for one as skilled as myself." The dread abyssal growled, and she knocked her knuckles against its skull. "Ah, well, even the best laid plans are soon ruined." She swept her staff out and murmured softly. The air around her thickened with soul stuff. Wailing faces took shape, and murmuring spirits clutched at her. Arkan would raise the flesh, but she still had the spirits of the drowned and recently dead to manipulate. While the Rotbringers were busy chasing the living, the dead would have their way. The strongest of them shot away from her like comets, spiraling towards the swarm of plague drones which spread through the skies above the shivering sea. She urged Nagadron down, swooping over the ice and fleeing mortals, followed by a writhing tail of spirits. The Rictus had served their purpose admirably, even though they'd let her down in the end. She was inclined to save some of them, at least, if only for Tamra's sake. Nagadron slammed into a plague drone, tearing at it. Neferata whirled her staff and drove the weighted ferrule into its rider's single eye. The demon's head popped, and she wrenched her staff loose. She swept it out, setting the air alight with the gesture. Burning plague drones fell, twitching to the sea like raindrops about the fleeing galleys, whose iron prows carved a watery path as their oars thumped the breaking ice, shoving the vessels along. Neferata nodded in satisfaction. Not all of the galleys had been so lucky. Several had been caught, and their passengers and crew fought frantically against the beastkin and rotbringers clambering aboard. She considered lending them aid, but only for a moment. She'd saved a few. That was enough. She had better uses for the dying. She whispered, and on the decks of an overtaken galley, the butchered dead rose again to attack their killers.
"Free!"
The word echoed through her head, followed by a twisting feeling.